From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. A number of national studies tell us prescription drug abuse among teens, using pain relievers, tranquilizers, stimulants, and sedatives to get high, is a growing concern. This hour, we learn about Iowa's new Take a Dose of Truth campaign. The aim of the campaign is to increase parent awareness of the risks associated with the rising abuse of prescription and over-the-counter drugs by Iowa teens. My guests, Gary Kendall, director of the Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, Amber Rand, program supervisor at Cornerstone Recovery Center in Ankeny. We'll also hear from the grandmother of a child dealing with prescription drug abuse. That's all coming up right after this news. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and you're listening to an archive edition of our program today. A number of national studies and published reports indicate that the intentional abuse of prescription drugs, drugs such as pain relievers, tranquilizers, stimulants, sedatives, to get high is a growing concern, particularly among teens. In fact, among young people ages 12 to 17, prescription drugs have become the second most abused illegal drug behind marijuana. Now, overall, teen drug use is down nationwide, and the percentage of teens abusing prescription drugs is still relatively low compared to marijuana use. However, there are troubling signs that teens view abusing prescription drugs as safer than illegal drugs, and parents are unaware of the problem. This hour, we'll discuss prescription drug abuse among teens with a number of guests, including, a little later in the program, the grandmother of a 16-year-old girl from Ankeny who has struggled with prescription drug abuse. My first guest is Gary Kendall. He is director of the Iowa Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy. He joins us from IPR in Des Moines. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
Go a little bit more into these national studies. What indications do we have at a national level about the rise of teen prescription and over-the-counter drug abuse?
Well, I think it's important to point out that this problem's been there for a number of years. We're just finally starting to get a little more light shed on it, and there's more data that's being tracked, and therefore we do have some things that we can report, but it's not a new problem. We've had this problem for a number of years. Some of the studies that we do have show on a national basis, as you were saying, that the perception, at least, is that these drugs are safer, mm-hmm. and you know, they're not going to be as harmful to someone as illegal drugs or ones that you buy on the street. In fact, the Partnership for Drug Free America has done a couple of studies, and one of those indicated that 40% of teens reported that they believe prescription medications are safer than illegal mm-hmm. drugs. And really, you know, the reporting, and this is self-reporting, of what they actually use or what they're willing to admit to using, one in five teens nationally reports intentionally abusing a prescription drug to get high. So it's by those numbers, it's clearly a significant problem nationally.
Mm-hmm. And so when we're self-reporting, are we assuming that the number is actually higher, or that's about right, one in five?
Well, I think that's the number that, you know, I mean, that's a high enough number to,
right.
to
yeah,
cause concern.
Not saying, not saying it's not, but perhaps some would be reluctant, of course, to self-report on this. What about Iowa? Any studies that indicate a more local survey?
Yeah, we do have a few more localized surveys that are happening. One's the Iowa Youth Survey, and that's not—it's not done frequently enough from our perspective. But it's done once every 3 years, and last year was the year that we did it. So it's actually fairly current data. And one of the questions that we ask in that survey is regarding usage of prescription drugs in the last 30 days, and 7% of Iowa 11th graders admit to using a prescription drug or misusing a prescription drug within the previous 30 days. So while it doesn't, the number doesn't, you know, look as bad as it does on the federal or national level, it's certainly a troubling number at 7%.
Mm-hmm. Also, I believe you're pointing to a Mercy Medical report of overdoses. What are the numbers on that?
Right. You know, some of the other data that we have is anecdotal. It's more anecdotal and stories that we've been provided with or collected. And Mercy Medical Center had 111, excuse me, drug and alcohol overdoses reported at their emergency center between June 15th of 08 and December 15th of 08. 94 of those 111 involved prescription or over-the-counter medications. So clearly it's a large, very large percentage of the overdose cases among kids that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Have we seen any deaths in Iowa among teens due to this?
There's been a few. There's one in particular that that we've been aware of here in central Iowa that took place in Des Moines, and it was in February of this year. It was a 14-year-old resident that died from an overdose of prescription drugs right here in Polk County.
In response to this, within the last few days, you've launched what is being called the Take a Dose of Truth campaign. Senator Harkin played a role in securing money for this campaign. Tell us about that.
Yeah, our Take a Dose of Truth campaign, it's primarily a web-based resource tool. Our intention is to try to provide a resource, particularly to parents, and to have a place where folks can go to access information that might help them especially talk to their kids. Because one of the issues that we have with these prescription drugs is the fact that they're actually legal to possess if you mm-hmm. have a prescription. And so we really have to focus on education and awareness to try to defeat the problem. And therefore, we're trying to provide this education and resource tool. And it's takeadoseoftruth.com is the website. Mm-hmm. And there's information on there for parents and professionals, various folks, to try and strike up that conversation with their kids so that they can talk to them about the dangers and risks involved with prescription drug abuse, really at any time that's convenient for them to sit down and talk to them.
We wanted to play, I think it's a radio ad. I'm not sure if it's available on the website along with the other thing. This is a radio ad, a PSA. This is one, it sounds like it's featuring the mother of a girl somewhere who died from prescription drug abuse.
It was very easy for her to get her hands on prescription drugs. And as parents or guardians, you feel helpless. Coming home on a normal Friday afternoon from work, and I heard the sirens. They had found her and she didn't appear to be alive.
Vanessa died in October 2007 of a prescription drug overdose. See Vanessa's story at takeadoseoftruth.com.
If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it differently, but that's not an option.
A message from the Iowa Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy.
So when people go to takeadoseoftruth.com, they have resources there. They aren't feeling helpless because we know those of us who have to deal with teens on a daily basis, it is not always an easy thing to start a conversation about an uncomfortable area and then to ascertain whether that's a part of your child's life, a teen's life, is it?
That's right. And in addition to those written resources, there are there's some video interviews that were done, including the one that this PSA just referenced. And, you know, those hopefully can be, if somebody sees or hears the PSA, that'll you know, be an opportunity for them, a conversation starter with their teen, or if they're riding in the car and they hear it or sitting in front of the television and see it, they can take that opportunity to strike up the conversation. And that's our hope. And that was Senator Harkin's hope when we worked with him to try to obtain the funding to do this project.
Mm-hmm. So how is this replicated in other states? How unique is Iowa in taking this step to up the awareness?
Well, there's various efforts going on in various states. I haven't seen anything quite like this. That was one of the reasons that we decided to go this direction with it, because there really wasn't a resource that's specific to prescription drugs that we could direct people to. So I think it's probably unique in that sense that it's a you know, topic specific to prescription drugs and it's all, you know, that's all that's on there. So hopefully it'll help people find it quick and be able to get the information they need in a timely fashion so that they're not spending all day having to hunt around for it.
Also joining us now from IPR Studios in Des Moines, Amber Rand. She is Program Supervisor for Teen Addiction Programs at the Cornerstone Recovery Center in Ankeny. Good morning to you, Amber.
Good morning.
So what are we seeing at your center? You have many years of work at the center, also involved with counseling. Are your experiences there at the center in Ankeny mirroring this rise, this abuse that we see in these studies?
Definitely what Gary's saying is true. We're seeing that at our center and have been seeing it actually for several years, as he mentioned as well.
So it's not a new thing. It's just something that we have to pay more attention to.
Yes, and it's great that we're getting a lot more public awareness out there about this issue. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. So give me a typical profile of a teen that abuses prescription drugs. How does it start, for instance?
A lot of times we'll see kids start with over-the-counter medications, things like cough syrups, products that contain dextromethorphan, which is a common ingredient in Robitussin, Coricidin, Mucinex has it as well. And kids will take large quantities of those over-the-counter substances in order to get a high feeling. And so a lot of times kids will start out using those and then often progress to the prescription medications as well as other things like marijuana, alcohol, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So the kids are going to wherever their local drugstore is, a Walmart, whatever, and buying these in quantities. Wouldn't that be noticed?
It would if the store was aware that, you know, it was a concern or an issue. Some stores do have those products behind the counter now, and the kids will have to actually get it from a pharmacist mm-hmm. who would be more aware of the issues. But a lot of the stores just have it right on the shelf. So kids are either buying it in large quantities or they're actually shoplifting it. And so, you know, people aren't noticing that they're walking out with several right. boxes or bottles of the products.
I asked that, Amber, because the meth problem was helped in great part due to the difference in the way we sell the drugs that go into making meth. And perhaps that's a solution here, in addition to the raising of awareness. We'll be back in just a moment with Amber Rand, program supervisor for teen addiction programs at Cornerstone Recovery Center in Ankeny. Also in our IPR studios in Des Moines, Gary Kendall, director of the Iowa Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, just launched within the last few days a new campaign to raise awareness about prescription drug abuse among teens. And we'd like to have you join our conversation this hour. What questions do you have about prescription drug abuse, especially among teens? Has it touched your family? We'd like to get your input this hour. 1-866-780-9100, our toll-free number, 1-866-780-9100. And when we come back, I want to ask Amber how aware parents are of this problem. Where are we starting when we're raising awareness? Where are we starting and what do we need to make clear to parents? And how do parents identify if their kids may be abusing prescription drugs? We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. This is an archive edition of The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. Today, a look at the growing concerns over prescription drug abuse among teens. Surveys both nationally and in Iowa showing that teens are abusing prescription drugs. A distant second to marijuana, but still a problem that we want to keep in our view. Iowa's Take a Dose of Truth campaign has just been launched. It's an aim to increase parent awareness about the risks associated with the rising abuse of prescription and over-the-counter drugs by Iowa teens. TakeADoseOfTruth .org, or is that .com, Gary?
.com.
.com. TakeADoseOfTruth.com is where you can find out more information. Gary Kendall, director of the Iowa Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, with us along with Amber Rand, program supervisor for teen addiction programs at the Cornerstone Recovery Center in Ankeny. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Back to you, Amber. Give us a profile of the type of teens that abuse prescription drugs. For instance, is it a similar profile to those who abuse illegal drugs?
Really, there's not a lot of difference as far as the types of substances. It really crosses all socioeconomic classes, all races, ethnicities. Kids from any kind of backgrounds can be abusing prescription drugs. I do think that at least at our treatment center, we tend to see kids that are middle class to upper middle class to even upper class do probably abuse prescription medications a little more than maybe the rest of our clients, maybe because they have access to it through parents, medicine cabinets, friends. They buy it at school, the internet, those kinds of things. But again, certainly I think any kind of kid from any kind of background can be abusing prescription meds.
Here's an email from John in Des Moines. He wonders if you can comment on teens being exposed to more and more medications that grandparents and parents are using. He asks, isn't there a perception out there that mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, use it to make them feel better? It must be okay then, right? This seems like a bigger societal problem that we adults need to deal with, says John.
I would definitely agree with that. You know, I think that these days it seems that more people are using medications for health issues. You see lots and lots of medication ads on the television, and that really exposes people in that way too. And so I do think it's easier for kids to access it through their own parents' medicine cabinets, their friends' or friends' parents' medicine cabinets, grandparents'. It is a lot more people do seem to be using medications and not necessarily abusing them, but using them. So then that just makes it an easier access point for the teens to get to them.
So in the same way that kids might take a nip out of the brandy bottle in the basement bar, they will go to the medicine cabinet and take a few pills in the hopes that it won't be noticed.
Exactly. Or kids also might, you know, take maybe a sibling is on some kind of medication. So they might take a few of those pills and then take them to school and be selling them to their friends at school. So that's also happening as well.
I've heard this term farm parties, P-H-A-R-M. What are those?
It's where kids come to parties and whatever pills they have, they dump them all in a giant bowl. So then you just have this big bowl full of medications that kids may or may not know what they are. And so then they just grab handfuls of pills out of this giant bowl and take them and are mixing pills, not necessarily knowing what they are or how the interactions could happen.
So you've talked to kids who've actually been to these farm parties.
Yeah, we've seen that. I've heard about it as well, but we've also seen it in our center, too, that it is happening.
So the thrill is not only taking the drug, but not knowing which drug you're going to get.
Right, which is really scary because
you
know, the drug interactions, you have no idea what could be happening with that piece. And then it's difficult for medical providers to treat kids should they end up in an overdose situation because the kids can't even tell them necessarily what they've taken.
As you pointed out earlier, you and Gary pointed out earlier that it's really an attitudinal problem, isn't it, that we see they have this label prescription on them, and it's not labeled illegal prescription, and people do use them. So in the treatment at your center, is the approach really just to change this attitude in a big way?
Definitely, that's a huge part of it, to recognize and teach kids how dangerous these substances can be. Particularly when they're used in a way that they're not, you know, recommended to be used or prescribed, and also the interactions being so dangerous as well. So that is a huge piece of what we work on, is that educational component with both the kids as well as the family members.
What types of drugs did you say are most commonly abused among teens?
We see a lot of pain medications, so the Vicodin, OxyContin, those types of substances. And then we also see a lot of kids using anti-anxiety medications, things like Xanax or Valium, those types of substances. And then we also do see some kids that abuse their ADHD medication, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, so Ritalin, Adderall, those types of substances as well. So I'd say those are kind of the three common ones that we see.
And what normally causes, by the time a teen with a parent, I assume, reaches your center, what has caused them to visit?
Could be a number of issues. It might be the parent just recognizing differences at home, whether, you know, there's more conflict at home, children not following the rules, not following curfew, you know, possibly running away, those kinds of things. It could be problems at school. Maybe the youth are showing a decline in grades, or they're not attending school, skipping school, those types of things. It could be a legal issue where maybe they've been caught with you know, marijuana or alcohol or something and receive some kind of legal charge that's drawing them into treatment. So it could be a whole host of those things happening, one or many issues mm-hmm. bringing them in.
It can be, I would think, harder to detect, unlike marijuana or alcohol. You don't smell it on a teen.
Right. You don't smell it. And I think that, you know, you might not necessarily notice a small pill or something in a child's pocket where you would notice, for example, an alcohol bottle in their room or, you know, a bag of marijuana. It is a little easier to conceal. So I think it is more difficult for parents to detect it.
These are teens, Amber. What's the youngest age you have treated at your center in Ankeny?
We can serve down to age 12. We don't see 12-year-olds too often. We do see quite a few 13-year-olds. I've been at the center now a little over 6 years, and it just seems like we, as the years have gone by, continue to see kids younger and younger. Where it used to be pretty rare we would see 13-year-olds, now it's becoming a lot more common that we're seeing 13- and 14-year-olds already coming into treatment. Where it used to be kind of typically most of the time kids wouldn't come in until 16, 17, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So definitely younger.
In the couple minutes we have before a break, can you give me a little story of one of the people you've treated, one of the teens you've treated at your center? More particulars?
You know, we've got a lot of kids that come in for a lot of different reasons, and a lot of times it's usually something's going on at home and usually something else is happening in their life as well. I think a lot of our kids, not only do they come in with substance abuse issues, but we tend to see a lot of emotional concerns and behavioral concerns. I think today's teens really struggle a lot with depression and anxiety and the stress that they're experiencing, even more so than the generation prior. And mm-hmm. so that's a big piece that I think is also pushing their substance abuse as well. And whether they're using marijuana on a regular basis to cope with that issue or whether they're taking medications more than they're prescribed or more than they should, that's a pretty typical thing that we see. And a lot of times the kids end up with us, they have multifaceted issues that are going on. And as I mentioned before, it's not usually just one thing that's affected in their life with their substance abuse. It's usually multiple issues, whether that's family, school, relationships with their peers, possibly legal issues. So mm-hmm. that's pretty common for a lot of our kids that we work with.
So is it often the case that you have not only parents but other family members, siblings in together in the treatment center? Is that the way you approach it?
Yes, we do do a lot of family therapy work at our treatment program, whether that's with their parents, could be grandparents, whoever the guardians might be. But we also do get siblings involved as well, because that can be important. A lot of times our teens either have used with their older siblings or maybe they're starting to get exposed their younger siblings to substance use. So we want to try to treat the entire family and do what we can to help them get back on track.
Okay, we have to take a short break, and we'll be back with Amber Rand, Program Supervisor for Teen Addiction Programs at Cornerstone Recovery Center in Ankeny. Also joining us from IPR Studios in Des Moines, Gary Kendall, Director of the Iowa Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, just launched a new campaign. That office, Take a Dose of Truth. Find more information at takeadoseoftruth.com. And if you'd like to join our conversation, especially if prescription drug abuse has touched your family, we'd like you to join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Coming up, the grandmother of a 16-year-old girl from Ankeny who has struggled with prescription drug abuse. That after this short break. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and you're listening to an archive edition of our program today. Today, we're looking at the growing concerns over prescription drug abuse among teens and Iowa's new Take a Dose of Truth campaign, to be found at takeadoseoftruth.com. It aims to increase parent awareness of the risks associated with the rising abuse of prescription and over-the-counter drugs by Iowa teens. Joining us in the Iowa Public Radio studios in Des Moines, Gary Kendall, Director of the Iowa Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, has just launched this campaign. Also, Amber Rand, Program Supervisor for Teen Addiction Programs at Cornerstone Recovery Center in Ankeny. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, especially if prescription drug abuse has touched your family, your teen, Also, our email, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us now, also at IPR Studios in Des Moines, Cindy. Cindy asked that we not use her last name. Cindy lives in Ankeny with her granddaughter, who is 16 years old. Good morning to you, Cindy.
Good morning.
Your 16-year-old granddaughter, you discovered your grandchild was abusing prescription drugs. How did you discover this?
Well, at the time that the problem started, my granddaughter, of course, lived with her family. They were out of state, and that was when the problems began. I think, you know, as she was like 14 and 15, she was there with her family. I think kind of the typical things that Amber talked about, there was a change in attitude. Her grades were dropping, isolating herself from the rest of the family, mm-hmm. Different friends. They become much more secretive. That's kind of how they protect things. And then and of course, you know, anyone with teenagers are unique characters anyway. You know, go through different stages and things, but this became, and then she started coming home and was higher, intoxicated, mm-hmm. and bad behavior, tried to run away sometimes, and that's when they tried to get her help at that time.
Mm-hmm. So it's a marked difference in attitude and behavior.
Yes.
About the attitude towards the parent, the family, they just start distancing themselves.
Exactly.
Often.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Where did these drugs come from?
That's a really good question, and I don't have a specific answer. I think in her case, like probably many others, when you're trying to get these illegal substances, the people that you come in contact with, they're going to have many options for you, you know, and I think that's one of the most frightening things, you know, even if they wanted alcohol or something, the people that they come in contact with that can get those for them have other things for them to try.
Mm-hmm. How did you and her parents go about getting her into treatment?
Well, she had been into treatment twice during that 2-year span for substance abuse, and would be okay for a while and then would go right back. That's when they decided that they needed to remove her from that location, because a lot of it has to do with the groups, you know, that you're with, and they wanted to change that. And then also one of the things, and again for Amber to respond to, it was my feeling that we had a problem with substance abuse, that we definitely needed to take care of that. But that was more of like a symptom of something that was deeper and something that emotional with her. And the dual diagnosis part of the cornerstone was tremendously helpful, mm-hmm. to deal with those core problems that helps with the substance abuse.
Amber Rand, when you hear this story and others like it, we hear often this term, an addictive personality. Is this play a role here as well?
I think that it can. I mean, certainly there's always the piece of family history can certainly predispose a young person to having problems with substances. Also just kind of that addictive personality, that need to go for extremes, mm-hmm. whether it's extremes with substance abuse or extremes with other kinds of behavior that can be out of control. I think that you do see that piece, as well as just the environmental factors that can also play a role as well. If, you know, if there's substance use going on in the home, or if they're exposed to it through an older sibling or something like that, that can certainly open the door for a young person to go down the path of substance abuse as well.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, how is your granddaughter doing now?
She right now is doing great. And we're very proud of her, and she's what I call a success story. She's mm-hmm. doing well in school, has a good group of friends, and has become very open about talking about the different
great.
Issues and that. So very, you know, you're on your toes. You have your eyes wide open, but
I bet.
But right now it is going really well, and I can't say enough. About, as I mentioned, she was out of state, and they struggled so much with getting the proper resources for her. I just feel blessed that with the resources with Ankeny High School, with Cornerstone, with the drug court program that is amazing. These resources have just been phenomenal.
Okay, very good. Cindy, thank you for that. Please hang on. We want to go to our phones, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us from Dubuque is Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, how are you guys doing this morning?
I'm fine, and I understand you have a connection to the PSA, the radio piece that we played that is part of the Take a Dose of Truth campaign.
Yes, actually, my niece Vanessa passed away from an accidental drug overdose.
I'm very sorry to hear about your loss, Mary.
Thank you.
Can you tell us the story of your niece, how it started?
Well, actually, when she was 14, she was diagnosed with cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. So she was in treatment in Iowa City hospitals. And, of course, once you're into that kind of treatment, you're exposed to a significant volume of all kinds of interesting drugs and prescriptions. So at 14 years old, that was pretty intense for her to take on. She was living with my brother at the time, who had sole custody. And once she got into remission, he was actually diagnosed with cancer and passed away 3 months later. Mm. So at that point in time, she kind of started to spiral, and it was easy for her to get her hands on medication because, you know, she was depressed from
right. A lot of pain, a lot of pain in her family. Right. It's easy to see how you would reach for at least a temporary solution in terms of
right,
your feeling.
Right. Mm. Well, and I had felt like we had gotten her on the right path. I had tried various different agencies to try and get assistance for her and just kept trying to intervene at every turn. We actually went as far as to have her committed, and the judge actually released her and gave her back the prescription drugs. So we kind of stayed in touch with her, but it was within, I would say, about a month after she was out of 2 West. That she actually, we were doing a wellness check on her. Her grandmother had called me and said she hadn't been answering her phone. And I said, and you know, when you listen to the story that I did for this campaign out on yeah. the website, you know, you just don't anticipate what happened next. You just don't. Mm-hmm. My husband and I were driving home from work on a normal Friday afternoon and, got a call that we needed to do a wellness check. And when we got to her apartment, we were standing outside, and the police went in, and they were calling her name. And, you know, it's a small apartment, so you're kind of thinking, you know, she's got to be at a friend's house then, obviously, if they're not finding her. Mm. And I can tell you the experience of hearing those ambulances coming towards the apartment. You knew where they were coming. The police stopped yeah. calling her name, but they weren't coming out of the apartment. And it's a day I will never, ever forget.
This is
the ambulance pulled up, and they walked to the apartment. They didn't run. And I just looked at my husband, and I just had a really bad feeling. And I really had a feeling that maybe she had overdosed. We didn't really know at that time what had happened. We didn't know because she had access to these medications, if she had, you know, been hanging out with the wrong people who gave her something that was street illegal, I guess, for lack of a better way to explain it. Mm-hmm. We had heard stories that, you know, she was having people visit her in 2 West and bringing Vicodin in. So we weren't really sure what had transpired. But the policeman came out, and he said that she had passed, and she didn't appear to be alive. And, you know, I just want to say to parents, you know, to have a police officer look at you and tell you that you cannot go in and see this child and that you don't want to is the most horrifying experience you could go through. It really, truly is.
What year did you lose your niece to prescription drug overdose?
2007.
Since that time, it's hard to estimate the impact on the family, on the extended family of the loss of this girl.
Well, she had a little boy, so that's why I kind of, in the back of my mind, didn't think it was suicide. And when I got the medical examiner's report back, and he basically said it was completely accidental, that she took her antidepressant that she was prescribed, and she took her painkiller that she had been given for necrosis in her hip from the chemotherapy, And the combination of the two made her incoherent. And she forgot that she had taken her antidepressant and took it again. And the combination of the three pills actually was what slowed her heart and killed her.
So
the follow-up part to this, which is we didn't know about till later, was that she had actually placed several phone calls to a friend of hers and kept saying, "I'm in trouble." And he didn't believe her. And to this day, you can just imagine how he feels.
Right.
And what he's got to live with. So even if that child has cried wolf 1,000 times, listen, go, go, go. Be there. Do anything you can. I mean, if he'd have responded, I'm not sure what the outcome would have been today. But, you know, this has impacted our family in ways that you cannot even begin to imagine. At one point, my husband and I thought we were going to be taking custody of her son because there was no other parent in the picture. You know, and my ex-sister-in-law, thank God for her, she took him in and she's been raising him. So he's been with family and his grandmother and his uncle and so on. So that's been a good thing. But life without her is definitely a challenge.
Mary, thank you for sharing your story in the hopes that it will help others avoid the same thing. I'm very sorry for your loss, your family's loss. Mary, thank you for joining us from Dubuque.
I'm glad I could dial in.
Mary is an aunt, also a guardian. She lost her niece to prescription drug overdose in 2007. Her story is featured in the new TakeADoseOfTruth.com campaign to raise awareness about the risks associated with the rising abuse of prescription drugs. Let's get to some more areas with our guests in the studio, Gary Kendall, Amber Rand, and also Cindy there, about things we can do to prevent this scenario from even getting started. We have an email from Mike in Des Moines that addresses one of the areas we wanted to get through before this hour is through. Mike writes, "Disposing of your unwanted medications can make a big difference. Most should not be flushed because of water contamination." Mike says he's a prevention specialist and family resources as well. "Many communities," he writes, "are putting on medication drops to allow the public to safely get rid of those medications before they can be abused." So talk to us a little bit about, do we talk to you, Amber, about storage of prescription drugs?
What we recommend to our family members is that they keep their medications in a secure place, whether that's in a lockbox that only they have a key to, something like that, that they're always continuing to keep track of how many pills are in a bottle. And if they're done using a prescription, then that they do dispose of it properly. They are recommending now that you dispose of it by, putting it in things like kitty litter or coffee grounds. So then that way, if, you know, someone goes through the garbage, they don't want to get the pills because in a kind of a gross thing.
Yeah.
And making sure then that you're not throwing away bottles that have your identifying information on them, that you take that off and dispose of that in a separate place. You're right that you're not supposed to be flushing those medications any longer. But the biggest thing that we recommend is just keeping an eye on how much meds that you have, and if you need to lock them up, that you do lock them up so people cannot get access to them.
Mike wrote in an email, too, that he says 70% of teens get the medications from their own friends and family and not from a drug dealer. So this is really a difference when we look at illegal drugs versus prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. Like I mentioned, just the medicine cabinets of unsuspecting people. I mean, how many people have been to the dentist for a dental procedure? You walk out with a prescription of 30 Vicodin. Maybe you take one or two and you have 28 pills sitting, you know, still left in the bottle. I think that's pretty common. And it's very easy for teens to be at, you know, their friends' houses and rooting around in medicine cabinets and taking, you know, a few pills. No one would ever notice if you're not keeping track of what kind of medicine you have and how many pills you have left in your cabinet.
Mm-hmm. I see one thing to do is also to monitor the internet use by your teens. It's very easy for anyone to purchase prescription drugs over the internet these days.
Yes, very much so. So it is important that you do monitor the teens' internet use. And If they do have access to any kind of credit card that they could use to purchase the medication online, that you're monitoring those credit card statements and keeping a close eye on that. Because if they're not getting it from their friends or parents' medicine cabinets, odds are they're buying it online.
Mm-hmm. So if you have suspicions about your teen or a teen in your extended family, or perhaps even if you don't have suspicions but you just want to address this issue, to talk to a teen about this, how do you talk to kids about prescription drug abuse? I know Gary Kendall, the new website, the new campaign, has a lot of information about it. But can you share some of the tips?
Sure. We encourage them to, you know, the most important thing is to have the conversation and to make it not be one conversation. It needs to be an ongoing thing, and we encourage folks to take really teachable moments, I guess you can call them, from the media or various places, because we're provided with those on basically a daily basis. There's things that can trigger this conversation. It doesn't have to be a big, you know, drawn out deal. Just as simple as you read a story in the newspaper about somebody that you know, went to the hospital with an overdose, or, you know, something more high profile like Michael Jackson's death recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something out there almost daily that parents or people that care about kids could latch on to and say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? And what do you know about, mm-hmm. you know, prescription drugs, those types of things.
But as we heard also from Amber and Cindy, you know, the tendency for kids who take this route is to become secretive. How do you get past that barrier? How do you mm-hmm. any tips from any of you on how to unlock that, Cindy, Amber?
I think it's important, just as Gary said, to continue to have those conversations on a regular basis. And it's okay to question your teens. I mean, it's okay to talk to them about their friends and who they're hanging out with, and to have honest discussions with them if you're starting to notice changes in their behaviors or changes in their friends or changes in emotional states, that it's important to be asking questions and not just bury your head in the sand and say, oh, it's typical teen behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It might be typical teen behavior, but sometimes, as Cindy mentioned, typical teen behavior can progress into something a lot more significant and serious and problematic. So it's important to be questioning and really keeping your eyes out for those changes, and then utilizing professionals if you feel like that's the next step that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I wanted to mention too
is Cindy.
As mm-hmm. yes, this is as a grandparent or parent, continually let them know that you're there for them,
right.
That you love them, and they're going to roll their eyes. They're going to you're going to think they don't care what, you know, but they do. And they need to know that I'm here, there's support. I mean, there's no perfect people. There's certainly no perfect teenagers. And so we're all up on that level. And to let them know, you know, you're there and you care about them.
Right. So whatever the reaction, often a negative reaction, if they're involved
with
this.
Oh, have thick skin.
Have a thick skin.
You're the adult in the room.
Don't take it personally.
That's right.
Uh-huh. I see here, too, that one of the tips is to cover the consequences with your teens, to talk to them about some of the consequences that are very distasteful when you're abusing prescription or over-the-counter drugs. Amber?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's important, you know, whether it's the medical consequences that can happen, the emotional consequences that could happen, even consequences, you know, at school. If a youth is found with a large number of pills that they're not prescribed, there's probably going to be consequences from the school system in regards to that, even though it's not necessarily an illegal situation, but the school's going to probably intervene on that behalf. So I do think it's important to let kids know the dangers and the consequences that can happen with this kind of abuse.
Cindy, you said it was very important to get your niece granddaughter out of this a peer group, and that's mm-hmm. where the move came from. That sounds like it was really the crux of a better life.
It was, but that, I mean, that's not an easy transition. It's, you know, for a teenager and you move in, especially a school the size of Ankeny, you don't have friends. And teenagers need friends. And so it's very challenging, very difficult. And she did not want to do that because that's very scary. So it's been, you know, that's been quite a challenge. But we're making progress, I think, all the time.
Congratulations on that. We have to leave. I want to leave the last word to Gary Kendall in just a moment. Cindy, grandmother of a 16-year-old girl from Ankeny, struggled with prescription drug abuse. Thank you for joining us. Amber Rand of the Cornerstone Recovery Center in Ankeny, thank you for joining us. Gary Kendall, director of the Iowa Governor's Office of Drug Control Policy, thank you for joining us. Tell us again how we can get in touch with this information and how we can use it.
Well, go to takeadoseoftruth.com, and you can use the information to hopefully have those conversations with your kids to dispel the myth that prescription drugs are safer than other illegal street drugs.
Okay, very good. Takeadoseoftruth.com to find out more information. Thank you, Gary, Amber, Cindy. Thank you very much for joining us this hour. The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt and Catherine Perkins with help from Julie Englander and John Pemble. Our producer assistant today was Kelly Teeslink. Support also comes from Dennis Reese. Podcasting available and on-demand audio as well at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. This is an archive edition of The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio.